time, everybody. It's time for another episode of The Skinny on Beauty, the only tech-savvy radio show that talks about where beauty, art, and technology collide. Welcome back, Cheryl Hawley. It's been a long time.
I know, Paul.
Where have you been? You took a break, a little hiatus. You went and studied on a mountaintop with your yogini here.
Happens.
Yes, it does, and it was much needed. I'm so happy to be back, though, and live for the first time on Facebook Live. So, hi, everybody. We're here today with Christy Curtis, yoga guide and mindfulness coach. Christy is the founder of Christy Curtis Yoga, where she offers yoga, guidance, and personal tools that can be implemented into functional daily living to bring self-awareness and mindfulness. In addition, Christy offers several workshops and fresh retreats to unplug and reset, and we'll talk about a couple of those at the end of the show. But to all my listeners who are interested in just learning more about yoga and what it can do for your body and, you know, trying to find peace in the chaos, you know, especially during the holidays, you know, we have a lot of tips for you today, so stay tuned. But I am so happy to have you here with us, Christy. How are you doing?
So good. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So Christy is our first yogini that walked through OC Talk Radio doors today. So Paul, the producer, is very excited. And we're all excited.
Waiting for her to levitate or something.
You just wait. Yes. The show's not over yet.
She's going to raise
exactly.
The roof.
That's the grand finale. You just gave it away. But yes, we're all very excited to learn more about what you do. And
can I just ask one question? I'll try and shut up about it. But are there lots of yogini is, I take it, a female yoga.
Exactly.
Yogi.
And
yoga.
A yogi, yes, would be considered the male.
Got it.
Male
and are there person. Lots of, because I've only ever seen male yoga, yogi. Are there
only men doing yoga?
No, but when you see whatever the leader, whatever the guru, whatever the
teacher,
I've never seen a woman. I've seen women, I guess, teach yoga classes, but I've never seen, when you think of the Beatles and their famous yoga instructor or those kinds of images, I grew up in the 60s or whatever, you know, there was always a guy with a long beard as the yoga.
Yeah, I think yoga, I mean, it's definitely evolved over, you know, it's just knowledge, and whoever can grow to attain it, male, female, I mean, pretty soon there might be dogs leading yoga. I mean, that does happen. There is yoga for dogs.
Oh, my God.
There is yoga
you never know. It could be like Dogini coming next. But, you know, but it's an evolution of an ancient practice, and it's a movement from it's an energy thing. It's mm-hmm. our bodies, it's our hearts, our mind, our souls, and you just kind of work to connect it. Yoga defined means union, and it's bringing all that stuff together to really re-immerse and recreate, really, and rediscover what our own centering is as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. And yes, and like I was saying, the holidays is a great time to find that center. You know, there's a lot of intimidation and actually, you know, misconceptions about yoga, you know, and so I'd like to address some of those today with you. But
sure.
Tell us what your first yoga class was like.
Oh, my first yoga class. My first yoga class, I was actually in college, and I played collegiate sports. I was a basketball player, grew up playing sports all my life, and I took it not only just for the extra one unit that I needed for my physical education minor, but for sports injury prevention. And I kind of just was like, what is this? I was a little skeptical at first, but then I went in and immediately I found my breath. And it reminded me, as an athlete, and the athletes that are listening are people who kind of are runners, can get in this called the flow state. And you're just kind of in this space where, for me, on the basketball court, when I would be playing actually a game that I was maybe doing well at and excelling at, it was just seemed the crowd was quiet, the basketball rim would be gigantic, and I was just in this zone. And I found the yoga mat and I found that exact same feeling, and I was like, what is happening? What is this? And the same
so
thing,
unexpected.
Absolutely,
right?
And I would run. I was an English lit major, and that was where I would get my ideas, and I felt this same type of just calmness of clarity on the yoga mat. So for me, it was I was able to transition very smoothly to, okay, I don't have to have all the other stuff. I don't have to have teammates. I don't have to have anything else but me and this piece of rubber mat. What's going on? And then my curiosity peaked, and downhill from there, I was hooked.
Wow. So you, right off of, you know, your first practice, you pretty much knew that you were making this transition already.
Totally.
It was just a natural thing for you.
Oh, yeah. And then don't get me wrong. Very competitive. I was an athlete. Competitive. I can't touch my toes. What's wrong with me? I suck. I'm terrible. And that goes through, I think, everybody's head. And I think that's the big misnomer of this practice is I'm not flexible. I can't do yoga. But for me, it was like, this is just part of the process. It's practice. There was definitely frustration getting in there early and looking around at other people and not comparing myself. I was lucky. I was in a college class. I didn't go to a studio first. So that was, I kind of had a different introduction.
Yeah.
But, as a teacher, you know, knowing what students come into, you want to try to make it as welcoming as possible because it can be very intimidating.
It can be very intimidating.
Now, I took one yoga class many years ago and they tried to get me to do down dog. And instead, they said I created a new thing called Bad Dog.
Oh, yes.
Oh, gosh.
And they were like, Bad Dog. And I never went back. That was it.
Well, Paul, if you come to my class, I promise that won't happen again.
Right.
I promise.
So in this transition, you know, I mean, we have a lot of different transitions in our lives. You know, we can't fight change. I mean, change is inevitable. And, you know, when I discovered yoga, and I was so glad that you were there as well, Christy was my teacher instructor for teacher training at Core Power Yoga, and that's how our paths had crossed.
Yes.
But, you know, during these times of transition, yoga can be that escape that you're looking for during stress or change. And, you know, what elements would you say that yoga brings to helping you deal with mental and physical stress?
Yeah, I think yoga, to deal with mental and physical stress, yoga is a gateway. It's a gateway for us to understand that when we practice yoga, we're putting physical stress on our bodies that's controlled. Mm-hmm. You're being guided by a teacher, most likely, and going to a studio unless you have a home practice. But you're being guided and put in positions that are not normal. I mean, you're not going to go just break out down dog, Paul, in the grocery store aisle.
Or bad dog.
You know, or bad dog. You know, you're not. And so you're holding these poses that are going to make you sweat, that are going to make your mind chatter. Mm-hmm. And that's life. That life is a bunch of chatter, external stuff. And so we put ourselves in a controlled environment where we're putting physical stress on our bodies and try to maintain a calm mind. And so that we can then transfer that practice of when we go to life off the mat to places where we are now in a environment that doesn't have stress that's controlled, but we know how to navigate it because we can train the mind to be a little bit calmer, a little bit more in a place of stillness. So yoga, again, how it can work connectively with the body and the stress space is that we're placing physical stress on the body, but trying to maintain a calm state of mind through that transition.
And breathe through,
and breathing,
right?
And the breath is spot on. And the breath is the stakeholder. The breath is the connector.
Right. And maybe during, you know, such a stressful season and time and trying to get ready and getting your last minute shopping done. I mean, Christmas is 2 days away, you know, and I thought that I had all of my shopping done. So I was like, yay. And then I realized I cannot believe I forgot somebody.
Yeah. And then, but think about it. And when that happened, were you breathing? Were you holding your breath? Was it tight in the chest?
Like, oh yeah.
We aren't
just talking about it.
I know the anxiousness starts, right?
Right.
And so
right.
The breath is one thing. We come into this world with it. It's part of our expiration date when we leave, but it's with us all the time.
Yeah.
And if we're not paying attention to it and giving ourselves the opportunity to be with it and notice it, is it sporadic? Is it in the upper chest? Is it in the belly? Are we even noticing it whatsoever? It's a great awareness tool to ourselves.
I have to say, on a serious note, I did go through therapy years ago. I went through a tough period of my life and I didn't know what to do, so I went to a therapist. And the first thing she made me do is to start being conscious, because I was having anxiety. And she said, become aware of your breath. And I was like, my breath? I never thought about my breath. I never think about my breath. Or how deep a breath I take, or how short a breath I take, or whether I hold my breath or whatnot. And yet, it's very, very powerful.
Yeah,
it's being
so
present.
True.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that, Paul.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. You know, there's times that you can't just, you know, you can't break away and get to a yoga class. Sometimes you just can't. So in those times, what would you recommend, maybe two poses that we can, you know, just do in our living room or in our bedroom, you know, to help focus on
the present moment? Did you want me to show you down dog or bad dog?
That could happen. Yeah, you know, two poses. And honestly, for listeners, if, you know, whether you're at home or wherever it is, just on, for me, what I have found that some of the best tools is just getting grounded. So for those of us that can, either even in our desk chairs, if you can get your 2 feet down on the ground and just find, and just taking seat, that's asana. Asana is a Sanskrit name for the word seat, and you find that place of being in that pose. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can sit on the ground cross-legged in another form.
Paul's doing it right now.
He's doing it. I know. He's getting ready to levitate. And it's happening. Or another one is, it's called child's pose, balasana, and that's one where we put our toes together and our knees are splayed out quite wide, and you kind of crawl your body down and forward. It's a great grounding, a grounding pose, and your forehead's mm-hmm. against the earth. But another great one I love is called legs up the wall. So if you are at home right now and you have accessibility to just a floor space and a wall, you'll lie down flat and you'll put your legs up against the wall, so it'll kind of look like an L. And a wonderful, it's an inversion, so it kind of where the head is below the heart, but it's a calming pose. It helps drain swelling of the legs. It is just, it's a wonderful restorative practice piece. It helps create, you know, it aids in anxiety. It helps heal. So legs up the wall, child pose would be some of the two best ones just to get grounded. And I think that when people can feel grounded, there's less tendency to feel so flighty and operate from what we know as our sympathetic nervous system, our fight or flight, because that's our everyday. We operate, that's all we know. We go back to this part of our brain that's back in the day. You know, that's our fight, flight, or freeze. It's survival mode. And we're so caught up in that every day. Holiday shopping, you know, career, relationships, family, juggling acts. Mm-hmm. And we forget that we have this internal mechanism of the parasympathetic nervous system, of our rest and digest. And we have to find the balance of both of those ends. And that's what the practice of yoga, breathing, meditation, mindfulness, what it all brings. So we just got a coupling, a union of it all together.
Mm-hmm. Those props.
Yes.
Like, okay, so you walk into the yoga studio and you see straps, you see sometimes mats.
What?
You
see, what kind of yoga studio is
right,
you going
exactly,
to?
Right? I know.
Whips and other things. Are,
you
bad dog.
Know.
Bad dog.
Yeah. Now Paul's getting really excited for some yoga.
This is sounding better all of a sudden here.
I think I'm blushing. But no, you do. And you know what I'm talking about, and I hope most of you do too. And if you don't, then that's fine. I mean, that's why Christy's here to help us understand what these tools are that are inside a yoga studio. The other one is blocks, right? So you'll just see a wall of just blocks, styrofoam blocks. I mean, what are these props, you know? What are they used for?
Right. And again, it's something that where a lot of times we can be intimidated by what we don't know. And I've advised students of all levels, practitioner, it doesn't matter if you're just beginning or if you're excelling. In vinyasa style yoga, which is the type of yoga that I teach, or hatha yoga, we use blocks all the time. And blocks are, just think of it as just another additional form of support. You know, we sometimes are, we refrain from asking for help in life, but blocks, props are there to help either gain a little bit more alignment. It's a conscious decision to, okay, I'm overstraining, I'm holding my breath, I'm limiting my range of motion because I'm trying to force and do what everybody else is doing. But if you can have a prop of a block, it makes it easier. And truly it's for the alignment, because when we can be aligned in our bodies, we're going to align more with our breath, we'll align more in our mind, and that's part of the practice. So it's, and then straps are awesome. I used to hate using straps because I was like, one, I didn't know how. Even when as a beginning student, and early
they're
on,
the most intimidating.
Totally. And it's like, oh, I'm strapping this around my arm and my forearms, and you want me to do what? But again, it's a kind of, they act as a container. There's a way that we can expand with them and or harness our energy from them. So it's a real, they're wonderful. And I highly recommend, I work at a great studio, one of the places I work, and we advise, get a blanket, get a strap, and two blocks, no matter what, because you never know when they're going to come in handy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they're not just for beginners.
Oh, my gosh, no.
Right.
They are wonderful. I've been through all of my recent trainings that I've gone on and do many additional hours. It's a mandatory piece. I mean, when I do my home practice, it's blocks, it's blankets. There's chairs that we use. There's another wonderful form of yoga called Iyengar. And they use, I mean, there's straps up against the wall. So it's a really, it helps aid the practice. It helps aid the practitioner to feel in their body. Mm-hmm. Versus being in terms of force and angst and, mm-hmm. and pain.
Now, okay, so I'm going to go there, okay?
Do it. Go there.
When I was doing teacher training, a lot of my friends were like, Cheryl, aren't you afraid that you're going to pass gas in
class?
Oh,
yes.
Right?
Happens.
And I was like, what? I mean, I never really thought about that prior to wanting to do yoga or even try a yoga class. But I could not believe how many people had asked me about that, you know? And so now it's a common thing, right?
It happens. We're human people. It happens. It happens when you're doing yoga.
And it happens when you're doing yoga. But there's some ways that maybe you can help not do that, right? So what would you recommend? Maybe eating before yoga or not eating? What would you recommend?
Well, I think really, I mean, ideally, you want your body to be in a optimal state. And does that mean that's not always going to be the case. You know, you might be able to get to a yoga class at, you know, maybe you had a late lunch at the office and you had lunch at 3 and you want to get to a class at 4 and you're going to scarf some food down. But ultimately, for me, I would advise try to not eat at least 2 hours before a yoga practice because you want your... Again, your breath, your diaphragm, there's a lot of movement in this part of our anatomy that wants to be, you know, really at rest. But I would highly advise if you are going to eat anything, eat light, eat clean, eat something from the earth.
I mean, like, don't eat beans.
Exactly. Well, you know, but it depends. I wouldn't go scarf down, you know, big old grande burrito or anything. But, you know, and I think that there's a whole, I mean, it's a whole other show worth, it's called Ayurveda, but it's like eating for, it's this conscious effort of the life science of yoga. And our bodies and eating right for the kind of body type that you have and the personality you are and the season that we're in. And it's such a wonderful, fascinating piece of the big practice in itself. So for anyone listening that might be interested, it's another good thing to investigate on your own.
Yeah. And what about after yoga to replenish your body and absorb all of the...
The goodness.
Yes. The bliss.
Totally. You know, and again, what I've noticed in my practice as it's evolved over the years is I go back to just trying to eat clean in a place of nourishment, but doing that mindfully. And I know that a lot of times, yes, yoga can create an internal fire of, you know, either appetite or just a zest for life. But if we can, you know, couple that with something that is truly in form of clean eating, it's something that is alive. I mean, if you're going to go, you know, inhale a box of Oreos after you do a yoga class, you know, I'm sure it happens, but it's one of those things that's like, what kind of energy are we now putting in after the energy that we evoke that is just such a natural state?
Right.
And so to maintain the benefits and have them linger a little bit longer, at the end of yoga, we call, you know, we have this piece of our practice called Shavasana, where it's this true rest state of we... You know, sometimes people fall asleep, and that's okay. You know, you let your body resolve.
Yeah. So and talk about that a little bit, actually, because a lot of people are like, what are these weird, crazy people doing on the floor? They're all still, you know, and a lot of people, I actually noticed people would leave sometimes before Shavasana. Mm-hmm. So what is Shavasana, Christy?
Yeah, Shavasana is called corpse pose. And basically it's, you know, through yoga, we prepare ourselves for the end no matter what form we're in.
Okay.
The end is going to happen. Mm-hmm. End is part of the change of our process. And so Shavasana corpse pose is just kind of that, you know, that laying on the ground. You are literally, you can use it as a way to receive, let things go. Mm-hmm. But truly, I love to describe it to my students as you absorb the benefits of the practice. You let your body be still. You let your mind be still. There's no controlled breathing. Mm-hmm. And energetically, after doing a class, you feel different. The body is worked. It's twisted. You're tested in your balance and your mental strength. And you just finally have 2 minutes of your day to just be.
Yeah. And that's actually my favorite part.
Yes. It's so many people's favorite.
It's my favorite. So I'm like, why are you guys leaving? You crazy.
I know.
You know?
Yeah. And if you ever do go to a yoga class and you have to leave early, just take an early Shavasana. Like I always tell my students, just get it 1 minute early. And there's nobody cares. You just do your thing.
But you just
get
do
the rest. And because that will help kind of seal the practice.
Yeah. So now you also, in addition to being a yoga guide, mm-hmm. You also are a mindfulness coach.
Yes.
So what is a mindfulness coach?
Yeah, you know, it's fun that you asked this question. This is something that I've grown to know through the practice. And after doing a lot of meditation and doing a lot of mindfulness-based meditation, I've kind of created this, and mindfulness coaches exist. But for me, and when I work with clients, it's becoming very, very present to our everyday, but keeping a state of equanimity amongst the craziness and change, but allowing ourselves to just do one thing at a time, mm-hmm. mindfully, which means slowing down. And that can be, you know, from driving and noticing your hands on the steering wheel and not listening to the radio, or it can be anything. You know, as we're sitting here, I'm mindfully in a seat. If I, you know, stop talking and pay attention to really feeling my feet against the carpet, my hands against my legs, and it can be taken into any way, shape, or form, because I think what people lose sight of a lot in this everyday life is how to be mindful, because we're looking, life is easier on autopilot. It's easier when we check out.
Yeah.
And checking in is the hard part. And so being mindful about our emotions, our feelings, our thoughts, our habits, all these things that we're trying to fix it quick, when we can become mindful of that and we go to this internal well source of, oh, I might have my own answers. I don't have to go pop a pill. I don't have to go take some surgery. I don't have to go hang out with these people. I don't have to, you know, it's so for me, that is kind of a mindfulness based space of, and you hold space for yourself with it. And notice your reactions to it.
So now, would it be a form of therapy?
I think it could be. Absolutely.
Like somebody would be seeking, I mean, why would somebody say, you know what, I think I need a mindfulness coach?
Yeah, I think clients that I work with, and a lot of the stuff that we do is meditation based, but being mindful is just, my life is, I'm overwhelmed, or I only operate on autopilot. I don't know how to feel. And I work from a place of personal experience where my life was an overly aggressive, competitive, wound type A person. And I just knew go mode and go mode only. And with that, I severed a lot of things that were really good in my life, relationships. And I found myself in an unhealthy job that was toxic. And I just kept going through the motions because it's thought it's what I needed at the time. I wasn't mindful of what I was doing. I just was, this is what I needed to do. I was living the life of the shoulds. And learning how to be mindful. And that got me in touch with my feelings. And again, through yoga, it's, you know, it's how your body feels. Mm-hmm. And so if anyone is seeking that, it's a matter of, okay, take a look at what's not working in our lives. What can I do differently? And that is just a part of mindfulness, is becoming real present with just that.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit more about mindfulness and Christy's retreat.
Yeah. Mindfulness is a way to be present. I mean, it's coming back to being present to what exactly you are doing, regardless of all the external, there's sounds going on outside the room. There's all these other things that we're addicts of distraction.
Mm-hmm.
So to be mindful is a matter of, I have the ability to just focus on just doing one thing with the ability to notice that other things are going around, but I can always come back to just this one thing. And that's
present.
Why using the breath as a mindfulness tool, that actually there's an even exchange of the breath as the anchor, the breath, or it could be a mantra, it could be a word for something, for somebody, a positive affirmation. There's a lot of different things that people can have somebody come back to. So mindfulness is that kind of culmination of, you know, how can I maintain a focused presence of being here and not checked out on autopilot?
Is that like when actors say being in the moment?
In the moment. Yeah. And I think for businesses and everybody else that need this, I mean, it's going to improve the productivity of your labor force. I mean, when people are alert, and engaged and willing to be more productive, and they're not as tired, they're stress-free, and they're less anxious, that's going to drive business. And so having this in corporations is, I really think it's a vital piece.
So you really think we're addicts of distraction? I think that's a term. Did you ever hear that term before?
We're totally addicts of distraction.
We're not just text head.
I haven't heard that one either. Love it, though.
Haven't we all seen that text head where you're all crumped over trying to do this?
If you're out, you know, walking around the street or in shopping malls, and this is where we all are. Yeah.
I've actually thought about, like, what are they going to be the repercussions of that?
Yeah.
You know, because
your spine and everything. Yeah,
I don't
everything.
Want my head like
no.
Yeah. You actually blog about mindfulness, and you do some videos on Facebook called Mindful Minute Mondays.
Mindful Minute Mondays. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how long have you been doing blogging? And
blogging for me started when I...
As opposed to the Bengals who used to do Manic Mondays.
Yes. Manic. So the Mindful Minute, that's true. But don't get me... I love me some Bengals. Yes. Don't get me wrong now. My blogging began, I did a solo month trip to Bali. I was in a time of my life. I'm like, I'm just traveling. I was kind of like this freelance wandering soul of what's my next turn at, you know, time of transition. And you go do crazy things like go to Bali by yourself. And I had this experience and I was like, I'm done caring about what people think and I'm just going to share it because I was so lost. And in that time, I really felt clearer and just a different sense of who I was. And it was just starting to make more sense. And I'm like, gosh, I'm not alone. And I just wanted to share that with people.
Yeah.
And it takes being vulnerable. It takes putting yourself out there and realize, you know what, some people, there's going to be haters no matter what. Not everyone's going to like what you have to say. And that's okay. That's all right. You learn what one of the law of four agreements, you don't take things personally.
Yeah, but for the most part, I mean, have you noticed a good shift?
Oh, yeah.
With not only like yourself, but the response.
Absolutely.
Maybe your audience has grown a little bit.
Yeah. And I just think because I've learned to speak from a place in my heart that's authentic and it's truthful. Because if we can't live from a place of truth, I mean, it's life gets real shallow.
Right.
It gets meaningless. And who wants to live that kind of existence?
No, I don't.
No.
I've been there.
We all have. At some point, we all have.
What tips would you recommend to, some of our viewers and our listeners that might want to start this path of, you know, trying yoga or even blogging and getting mindful?
Yeah, I think with anything, you start with where you are. You start not trying to fix it and not having this sense of, oh my gosh, I'm wrong. And that's the thing with mindfulness and breathing and meditation. Oh, I'm doing it wrong. I'm not doing it right. You just sit and you listen to this chatter and you realize, you know, we have over 70,000 thoughts a day, over half of which are about the same thing. Basically, we're all crazy. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Oh, really?
Speak for yourself.
I know. Hey, happens. But I was able to hear that and caught on to like, oh my gosh, this is the rumination of, oh, I'm the same. And then my energy
shifts. And we
all
have that chatter. Yes.
Right. And so I think for people, you know, you start with where you are and you have to get out of your comfort zone to change, to grow. Because that's the only thing that is our forever constant is
and
change.
And no one's going to judge you on that.
No. And it's okay. If you live in the Midwest or wherever you are and this is something that might seem very foreign. Hey, breathing, we all do it, but there's a way to bring a conscious awareness to the breath that allows people to, okay, I mean, I start my day every day with it. I mean, there's a series of breath you can do or just find going and meditate or even getting out in nature or you're sitting in your car and you just want to breathe five breaths where you actually feel, you can place your hand on your heart and feel the chest, the upper lobes breathe and or a hand on the belly and feel.
And it sounds a little crazy, but you guys, once you try it, you know, it does actually work. I mean, I love yoga and, you know, if you are in the Midwest, you can get all of these tips on Christy's website, which is Christy. Curtis Yoga.
And let's spell that because I thought there'd be four K's in there or something.
So, Christy, go ahead.
It's Christy, Curtis, Curtis, Yoga, YOGA.com.
That's pretty normal. Why aren't there 47 other ways to spell that?
You know, it's just sometimes you just stay your ground. So,
it's been wonderful talking to you today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Before we sign off, I definitely want to bring some enlightenment to everybody with your favorite quote.
Okay.
I end all of my shows with a favorite quote from one of my guests.
Okay.
Something that you've held yourself accountable to at one time or another.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just have to look at my notes here because I don't have it quite memorized. But this is a quote from Rumi. And for me, this speaks to my
heart. Rumi?
Rumi is a Sufi poet. And so very profound in terms of just philosophy and religion and just...
And the Sufis are the mystic part of Islam, right?
Yes, yeah. And your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it.
Ooh, so, I got chills. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
So you're not looking for love, just to get rid of the barriers and it'll find
right?
you.
Right, and that's the barriers. You know, it's our judgment. It's everything else and that we have. And, you know, to help with that, my next retreat is going to be in March. It's called Creating Emergence.
Okay.
And it's going to be in Palm Springs. So if anybody needs a desert fix, it's on March 17th and 19th. It's an easy 3-day weekend of restoring my meditation, mindfulness, clean eating, private accommodations. We have private and shared. We have our own pool in a lovely, lovely home.
Ooh.
And it's really special. So we would
and details are on your website?
Everything's on the website. Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Hopefully I can make that retreat. Thank you, everyone, for being here. If you have any questions about today's show, you can tweet me at Skinny on Beauty. If you have any questions on how maybe even to build your own brand in the beauty, health, or fashion industry, you can find more information on how to contact me through unitesocially.org. Thanks so much. Until next time, stay beautiful, Orange County.
You've been listening to Skinny on Beauty, the only place where beauty, art, and technology collide. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.